This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a church community located in Aurora, Illinois, whose mission is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Visit us online at orchardvalleyonline.com.
I know what some of you are thinking right now. You're thinking, man, I'm glad it was a little chilly out today because I almost wore my Christian t-shirt. And boy, would that have been a little awkward. And some of you are thinking, was that a choir for real at the Orchard? Yes, it was. We're going back in time. So, I think we should pray, because some of you look like you're a little angry about that song. I'm just kidding. Let's pray. No, we are going to pray, though. Let's pray. God, thank you for letting us gather. And thanks for giving us a sense of humor. We take after our Creator. You are a God who I know must have a sense of humor. And God, I pray today that our hearts would be challenged, our hearts would be stretched. God, over these next 3 weeks, as we begin this new series, I pray for great clarity. I pray, God, that I would share your words, not simply my words, but that your words would come across. And I pray that at the end of these 3 weeks, we'd be able to look back and we would just be amazed at what you've accomplished in our hearts and our lives. And we pray that, God, and we ask that now in your Son's name. Amen. Amen. Well, we are starting, of course, a new series. By the way, we are not anti-Christian t-shirt, okay? Well, some of them we are. Some we are. Okay, but, you know, isn't it good just sometimes to laugh at ourselves as Christians? Like, we need to do that. Because if we can't even laugh at ourselves, then we have some real issues, right? Right? Yeah, okay. So anyway, but because it really is being about people who love. I mean, I love that song. I think it's so appropriate, especially today as we start off this new series called About. And it's a series that really is very simply about us as a church community. It's a series that is about you as a follower of Jesus, or perhaps some of you as potential followers of Jesus. And it's also a series about others, the people whose lives that you intersect with on a daily basis. And here's the thing. I think this is not only going to be a great series, but I think it's going to be a very, I guess you could say, clarifying series. A series that I think will really clarify for many of us, you know, who we are as a church community. And I'm really hoping and I'm really praying that this series will be so, and the message behind this series will be so crystal clear for you that by the time these 3 weeks are over, that you'll find yourself landing in one of three categories. First of all, there's going to be many of you, in fact, probably most of you, who are going to find yourself at the end of the series more fired up, more excited, more sold out to the vision and the mission of the Orchard than you've ever been before. And you're going to walk away from this series going, okay, I know that 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 this is the kind of place that I want to be a part of. And even for some of you who've been around here a long time, I'm praying that God will resurrect some of you. Yeah, because you've been a little bit dormant, and I'm praying that God will kind of reach down and just kind of shake you a little bit so that you can get a fresh vision for what this church is all about. That's my hope, my prayer. And then there's probably going to be some of you who you're fairly new to the Orchard, and maybe you're just like new to church, period. And after these 3 weeks, you may find yourself saying, you know what, I just don't know. You know, I'm still not sure. And so I just want to say that if that's you, that is totally okay, because we really want the Orchard to be a safe place that you can explore, that you can ask questions, that you can come just as you are with your doubts, with your concerns, or whatever it might be. And so we invite you, and we're glad you're here. We know sometimes it takes time to know if this is the place for you or not. And so actually, this is going to be a great, great series for you as well. And then there's also going to be, I think because this series is going to speak volumes about who we are as a church community and really, I think, clarify the whys behind what we do, there's going to be some of you who you're new to the Orchard, you've been thinking about making this your church home, and at the end of these 3 weeks, though, you're going to come to a realization and you're going to say to yourself, you know what, this seems like it's a great place. I mean, the pastor, really good-looking guy, really sharp, really funny, but you know what, I think we just kind of like this place. I'm not sure that we love it. And so some of you are actually probably going to discover, because of how clear this series is going to be, that perhaps the Orchard is not the right place for you. And so I just want to say right off the bat that if that's where you land, I want you to know that that is okay. It's okay. Because see, one of the things we know is that it is impossible for one church to be the right church for everyone, isn't it? In fact, it's impossible. I mean, it takes all kinds of churches to reach all kinds of different people. And here's the thing for us. You know, at the end of the day, our number one priority is not about filling seats and just, you know, becoming a big church. I mean, that is not really what we're going for. I mean, our hope is that we fill our seats with the right people, the people who are supposed to be, or the people God's calling to be a part of the Orchard community. And at the end of the day, I mean, our hope and our desire is that we want people to be where God wants them to be. And if that's here at the Orchard, that's great. We celebrate that. We welcome you. We'll help you become a part of the community. But if it's not, that's okay too. In fact, we would even help you find a church that might be better suited for you. Because here's the thing. We believe that when you're where God wants you to be, that your spiritual journey is going to be a lot smoother. And when you're at a place that you can believe in, and you're at a place where you agree with the vision and the direction they're going, man, you are going to be able to support and be a part of that in a greater degree than anything else you could ever be a part of. And so that's our hope. That is our prayer, is that by the time these 3 weeks are over, that all of us will have great clarity about where we fit in the scope of the Orchard community. And then, here's the thing, too. I just want to get this out in the open, because by the time we hit the third week, okay, because I hate it when, you know, sometimes, you know, in churches you have these series where it's like the first couple of weeks, it's like getting you geared up, and then the third week, it's like, boom, they come in for the close, right? Well, here's the deal. The third week of the series, those of you who fall in that first category and you're like at that place where you know that you know that you know that you know, okay, I am going to go in for the close on you. That's right. I am going to ask you to step up. I'm going to ask you to be involved. I'm going to ask you, some of you are going to be challenged in a way that you have never been challenged before. And I'm going to ask you to serve. I'm going to ask you to give financially. I'm going to ask you to support what God is doing here, because here's the deal. We have a ton of work in front of us. We have a huge task in front of us. And so we're going to ask you to make it a priority to be here over these next 3 weeks, because, and if you can't be here, we'll still love you, but you need to download the podcast, because this is going to be a very, very, very important series. So, here's what I hope you'll come to find out, okay? Here's my hope, is that you'll come to find out that none of us are here just because we like the idea of just running a church. You know, I mean, listen, there's a lot of great things we could be doing on Saturday and Sunday if it was really just about running a church. Okay, it's so much greater than that. Listen, the reason that we've devoted our lives to this thing called the church is because we really believe that there's an opportunity before us to be a part of something significant, something big, something greater than what we could ever accomplish on our own. And so that's a dream that we have. And that's a dream that it didn't start with Scott Hodge, you know. In fact, it's a dream that for this church started over 80 years ago when this church first began. In fact, many of you may not realize this, but for about 25 years, my dad was actually the pastor and the leader of this church. In fact, it's quite an amazing story. If you've never heard the story, I'll share a little bit with you this morning. In 1978, my family moved here to Aurora. My dad was hired to become the pastor of this church, 1978. I know some of you are shocked that I was even born in 1978, but it's true. I know, I look much younger. But anyway, so you're agreeing or, okay, I couldn't tell, okay. But anyway, so my dad was hired to be the pastor of the church. The church was a different name back then, but for 25 years, he poured his life, he poured his heart, he poured his passion into this church, into this community. And then about 9 years ago, 2000, can you believe that's been 9 years? Isn't that crazy? But 9 years ago, my dad led the church to take one of the biggest steps of faith they've ever taken. They sold their little brick building that's a couple miles east of here, and they built this campus that we sit in today. That was 9 years ago. And you know, on the surface, things looked pretty good. You know, there's a new building, there was some momentum happening and things like that. But about a year after the church moved into this campus, my dad came to a very, very painful realization that something was missing. And essentially what he came to realize was that although the church had a new building and a new opportunity before them, before the church, the fact was people outside of the church were not being reached. Well, the church wasn't reaching people outside of these walls. And I think, as is the tendency probably with most churches and most organizations, probably most people, you know, over time, what happens, I think, is our mindsets and our attitude begins to turn very inward, doesn't it? I mean, that's just this natural tendency. And that's exactly what happened with the church. Over time, the mindset and the attitude of the church turned more and more inward to those on the inside than it was on those who God was calling us to reach outside of these walls. And what my dad came to realize was that it wasn't so much that the church didn't want to reach people, because the church would say they want to reach people. I mean, the problem was it was all on our own terms. You know what I'm saying? It was like, okay, we want to reach people, but they better like our music, right? We want to reach people, but they better like our service times. Or we want to reach people, but they better dress how we dress. Or we want to reach people, but they better be able to understand our Christianese language that we speak. Or they better appreciate our Christian subculture that we sort of created, and it's permeated the church. Well, thankfully, because my dad was a man of prayer and who believed in prayer, and was a person who I really believe knew how to hear the voice of God in his life, and because I think so many people were praying for him over the years and in this season of his life as well, he began to sense God speaking something to him that just radically changed his life. And it was basically these words: Larry, one day when you stand before me, the question is not going to be how comfortable were your people in their Christianity. No, the question is going to be, what did you do with what I gave you? What did you do with what I gave you? And it was at that moment that my dad, at an age when most of his friends and colleagues were thinking more about security and retirement and all of that kind of thing, decided to risk everything to radically change the mission and direction of this 80-year-old church. Of course, the problem was he had no idea how to do it. I mean, how do you change a church that's been going a certain direction for so long? Well, he had a very non-genius idea. He called his son Scott. Yeah. Okay, and so here's the deal. So even though I had some experience at larger churches and had been on staff at a few churches and thought a bit differently about church and that kind of thing, really had no idea either how to do it. But how do you say no to your dad? Well, very simply, you say, no, Dad. Which is exactly what I did. That's right. I told him no. First time he asked him, I said, Dad, there's no way that God is involved in that. There's just no way. And well, finally, after realizing that A, he was very serious about change, and B, realizing that you know, I too will one day stand before God, I decided I will obey. And so, but there were two conditions. The first condition was, I will come for 12 months, 1 year. That's it. The other condition was, and I'll never forget telling my dad, I say, here's the second condition. I do not want to be a pastor. Do not make me a pastor. I don't want to teach. I don't want to do hospital visitations. I don't want to counsel anybody. I don't want an office, because if I get an office, it's going to make it more official, and it's going to seem like I'm a pastor, and I do not want. I'll tell you what, Dad, I will be a consultant, and I will work from Starbucks. Okay, because I mean, that's a win-win, right? He gets 12 months. I get to work at Starbucks on their Wi-Fi for 8 hours a day, right? And so with a ton of unknowns and uncertainty in front of us, we began this very, very, very painful journey of change and transition. And as we begin to dive deep, we start asking a lot of questions. And one of the things we came to realize right away was that the kind of change that was needed was not going to be just simply about changing the church's name or you know, now we're going to wear blue jeans, or now we're going to, you know, start using more modern language or use technology or videos or whatever. What we realized is that it was going to be a lot deeper than that. That the kind of change that was needed was going to be a cultural change, a DNA change, a shift in the way we were thinking about church in general. I mean, why we exist in the first place. And we also realized that there were already a lot of good churches that were doing a great job at reaching Christians. But there weren't that many churches that were intentionally working to create something different, something unique, and something that would be effective at reaching unchurched or in some cases de-churched people. And so we decided that those were the people God was calling us to reach. People who didn't go to church anywhere, people who maybe were tired of church as usual, or maybe even people who didn't like church at all. And so those were the people. And see, in Aurora, that's a lot of people, because, I mean, our community is like 80% unchurched. And so we're going, okay, lots of churches reaching people who are already convinced, not a lot of churches reaching people who don't want anything to do with church, yet it's a very spiritual society we live in. The problem is they're not going to the church to get their answers. They're going everywhere else but the church. So we decided that those were the people that we were going to try to reach, which, as you can imagine, meant we had to change a lot of things. Because, see, for example, we knew that if we were going to try to reach people who'd never been reached before, that it was going to require us to do things we'd never done before. Right? I mean, if you want to reach people you've never reached, you've got to do things you've never done before. And so we realized we had to make some serious, serious shifts in the way we were doing church. I mean, for example, one of the things we realized was one of the best things we could do as a church was to focus on those things that would unify us, not divide us. And so we said, okay, we've got to be a church that really focuses on the things that are going to unite people. And so we decided that one of the things we had to do is we had to figure out what is it that we consider essentials and what are the things we consider non-essentials. We're going to focus on the essentials, okay? Because there's already a bunch of stumbling blocks out there that get in the way of people finding Christ. So why would we want to add more stumbling blocks to that by focusing on things like politics or things that, you know, would do nothing more than cause a bunch of fighting to happen within a church? And so we said, okay, well, we've got to focus on the essentials. We also decided, because here's the other thing we realized, Christians are mostly more known for the things they're against than the things they're for. And so one of the things we decided was that we have to be a church. We have to change that perception, okay? Because Christianity has a serious perception problem, okay? People don't have a real problem with Jesus. They have a real problem with the church. They have a real problem with Christians, okay? If you doubt that, go online and Google Jesus versus Christians. You'll see a video that we produced that shouts it from the rooftops, man. Okay, so anyway, so one of the things we realized is that we had to be a church that would become more known for the things we were for than the things we were against. So as you can imagine, we had a huge task in front of us. I mean, not just a huge task, but a painful, painful task. Because you know, change is never easy, is it? And I'll tell you, we were changing fast. In fact, someone one time said, you know what it was like, Scott? It was like you performed open heart surgery on the church, but without using any anesthesia. And so as you can imagine, because change is hard, and because we were for the most part starting over and becoming something very, very different, well, I mean, people began leaving. And not only did people begin leaving, but so did their financial support. I mean, imagine trying to carry, at that time, a $30,000 a month mortgage with less than 100 people giving. And so over time, things got really, really tough. In fact, I can still remember a couple times my dad and I sitting down, and there were actually a couple occasions where we really thought, okay, this next weekend could be our last. I mean, it is very possible that this is the last time that we will meet as a church called Orchard Valley Community Church. It was tough. It was tough financially, it was tough emotionally, at times it was tough spiritually. But can I tell you that in the midst of all of the pain, amidst all of the emotions that sometimes made you feel like you were schizophrenic, there was also this amazing God-given resilience and determination to stay committed and to stay focused. Even if it meant that it would just be me, my dad, a couple of our staff standing in this place all alone. We decided we're going to go for it, okay? And even though we knew that the whole thing could crash and burn and fail, we also, and in a much greater way, had a dream. We had a dream. And it was a dream that we were reminded of every single time we walked outside of these church doors. It was a dream that we were reminded of every time we drove around our city. It was a dream that we were reminded of every time we walked into Starbucks and saw the baristas who, for the most part, were in church nowhere or in a restaurant where the waiters or waitresses were not in church. And it was a dream that we were reminded of every time we walked out these church doors. And to make a long story, well, a little bit shorter, slowly but surely, we finally begin to see that dream come true. We begin seeing, some of you were here, you saw this happen. We begin to see unchurched people showing up, and not just showing up and then leaving and never coming back, but I mean unchurched people were showing up, and they were engaging, and they were getting baptized, and they were beginning to serve in the church, and they were beginning, I mean the stories of people's lives being changed were happening, and it was about a little bit after 2.5 years into this whole journey that we finally began to stabilize, and we knew that we were going to make it. We were about 90% sure we were going to make it. And I'll never forget the morning of October 10th, 2004. It was a Sunday morning. One of our staff, Ted Egley, who was up here earlier, was speaking that day. And I'll never forget my dad and I were standing in the back of this room right here. And I pulled my dad aside and we looked out at the church. And at that time, the church had almost doubled in size, which sounds impressive, but it's not really that impressive. When it was really, really small, to double it wasn't that big of a deal. But I mean, especially when you consider like right before that, we were probably the fastest declining church in America. But then we went to becoming one of the fastest growing in 1 week. We doubled from like maybe 30 to 60. I'm just kidding. We had a few more than that. But anyway, but I'll never forget, we're standing in the back of the room, and I said to my dad, I said, Dad, look. Do you see what's happening? You see this? All the sacrifices, all the bruises, all the pain, the loss of friendships, almost losing it all. Look, it's working. And from the back of this room, as we leaned up against that brick wall in the back, as we leaned up against that wall, my dad and I had a beautiful, beautiful moment of quiet celebration, just thanking God for all he had done. And of course, that's a moment that I'll never forget. Because as many of you know, it was not even 48 hours later that my dad suffered a massive heart attack and died. It's hard to come up with words to say how thankful I am for the time that I had serving with my dad. Because he was not just a dad to me, he was a mentor. He was a leader. And towards the end of his life, you know what he was the most to me? He was my best friend. My best friend. And what a blessing it was to not just see a church in transition, but to see my dad, a 60-year-old man, embrace and engage in a new way of living, an entirely new way of thinking about church that ended up completely changing his life. I'm so thankful. In fact, just to give you sort of an idea, I want to read to you from one of his journals. It's one of the most precious gifts he left us was his journals. And of course, having CDs of him teaching, and I was listening to some this past week and driving and bawling my eyes out, almost going off the road, you know, and joining him up there. But I want to read to you from one of his journals, something that he wrote about. This was a little bit less than a year before he died, and this really shed some light on the kind of transformation that he underwent in his life. He said these words. I'll put it on the screen here. He said, I do not know how to describe what has happened to me. I only know that deep within me, I mean really deep, it seems that something connected to an understanding of God's love has changed me. I have been captured by his love. It is something that I must admit I never knew existed, like I am now experiencing. I am consumed with a passion to tell people about what I have experienced for the sole purpose of helping them to know that they can have it too. I have a glimpse of what the institutional church has allowed to happen. It has presented a picture of God and of Christ that is inconsistent with who they are. As a product of that church, I desire to liberate those who are caught up in that, to save others from it. And see, that is what became his passion and his hope the last couple years of his life, to the degree that I'll never forget him saying to me, at least on two occasions, maybe even a couple more than that, something that I've never heard him say his entire life, and that was, "Scott, I so believe in the mission of this church, I so believe in what we're doing, that I'd even be willing to die for it." He believed in the mission of this church. And even though he didn't live to see it how we get to see it today, it's almost like he, like Moses, you know, just barely peering over and perhaps getting a glimpse of it. He believed in it, and he saw it. Perhaps he did see it more than even we see it. Well, a couple months after his death, I was asked to become the next pastor of the Orchard, which you know, to some people they think, well, that was probably an easy decision, which it really wasn't at all. In fact, it's funny because my wife and I, we always said, you know, first of all, we said we never live in Aurora. We'd never come to Aurora. We'd never go back there. And then when we came here, we're like, oh, no, we would never. Because it was funny because people would say, they're just changing the church to get it ready for Scott. And so we'd say, no, we don't even like you. Okay? and I'm kidding, but so we said we said one time we'd never live in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We lived in Tulsa, so now we're like, we never live in Hawaii ever. We're just gonna see what happens. We'll never live in Hawaii. You hear that, God? We will never live in Hawaii or the Bahamas, or, you know, we just keep going here. But anyway, and so anyway, a few months after we finally surrendered to God, we. And with a ton of prayer and with an amazing amount of support, accepted God's call in the spring of 2005. And wow, what a journey it's been. Many of you have actually been on this journey with us, and you've seen God do some pretty amazing things over these past 5 years. In fact, this last week I was sitting down, I was thinking about this and looking back at some records. In the last 5 years, we've had the privilege of baptizing over 500 people who've gone public with their faith in Jesus. Our weekend gatherings, I mean, the number of people who call the Orchard their church home has grown, listen to this, in 5 years, over 200% in 5 years. People who've engaged with their time, they've engaged with their talent, their treasure. People have engaged in the outside in the community, serving and loving. I mean, the emails, the stories. I got to say, I'm so excited. I'm so thankful for all that God has done. But you know, I get even more excited when I start thinking about the steps of faith that God is leading us to in the future. And the stories that are unfolding right before our very eyes at this moment. I'm thankful. I'm excited. But can I tell you what gets me the most excited? I mean, what really gets me excited is the idea of committing my life and journeying together, which is with as many of you that want to go on this journey with me and all the others that God will bring into this community in the days and the weeks and months ahead, as we work together to find ways to pour our hearts and our love into this community that needs so badly to experience the beauty and the love and the grace of Jesus. That is what excites me more than anything. More than the Orchard growing and becoming some kind of big church or the Orchard being known as a creative or innovative church or any of that. Look, I'm talking about, I mean, what if this could become the kind of church that literally becomes irreplaceable to this community that we're in? I mean, can you imagine if one day we were to announce that the Orchard is closing its doors and we were to walk outside of here and our community would be so devastated by the idea of us closing our doors that they're protesting and they're begging us to stay because there's something beautiful that this community of people called the Orchard brings to the city, to people's lives. And ultimately, to places even around the world. I mean, that is what I want to devote my life to. And I'll tell you, for as long as God allows me to lead this church community, that's what we're ultimately going to be about. Being an irreplaceable presence in our city, in our surrounding communities. Irreplaceable. That is what I want to devote my life to. I don't care about pastoring a big church. I don't care. I don't care about being known as a creative person or anything. What I care about is God allowing me to be a part of something that is irreplaceable. That's what I want to devote my life to. But the only way that's going to happen is by keeping God's priority our priority. It's the only way. And some of you might say, well, Scott, I mean, it's kind of audacious. I mean, how can you say you know God's priority? Well, actually, the scriptures, I think, paint a beautiful picture of what God's priority really is. In fact, Luke chapter 15, when you have time, I want you to kind of dive into these stories because they're pretty insightful stories. But Luke chapter 15, there's three stories that Jesus tells. And it's interesting because these stories, I mean, the context of these stories is very interesting. I mean, basically, Jesus had been getting his chops busted by the religious people around him because, well, the fact of the matter was the religious people didn't think that Jesus was religious enough. I mean, think about that. And here's why. Because Jesus was hanging out with seedy people. He was hanging out with sinners in the hands of an angry God. Sorry. But Jesus was hanging around with sinners. He's having meals with them. I mean, he's hanging out at their homes, for Pete's sake. I mean, he's pretty much just loving them and accepting them. And this really, really made the religious people angry. And in Luke chapter 15, Jesus kind of responds to all of this by telling three stories. We don't have time to dig too far into these, but the first story, and by the way, let me just say, I know some of you are really hoping to get to watch the Bears game that starts at 12, and so I just want you to know that if you stand up and leave, I'm going to point you out to everyone, so don't do that, okay? Yeah, and on top of that, I will pray a curse upon the Bears if you do that. I'm just saying, all right? Because this is important today. This is a heck of a lot more important than any Bears game. All right? Okay. Why is it only women clapping right now? Yeah, that was a short clap. And if I see you slip something in your ear, uh-uh. No. See, homie preacher, he don't play that. Okay? No. Anyway, so Jesus tells three stories. The first one is not about a bear. It's about a sheep. There we go. Yeah, go ahead. Do you know sheep are really stupid? Did you know that? Yeah, they might be cute, but they're really stupid. Yeah, and you know that the Bible constantly refers to us as sheep? Anyway, so there's this story. Jesus tells us a story about a sheep. And here's the story. A shepherd has 100 sheep. One of the sheep gets lost. What does he do? Well, Jesus tells us that he will leave the 99 who are found, and he will go after. He'll go out to find the one that is lost. And he goes on to say this, Luke 15, verse 5. When he has found it, he will joyfully carry it home on his shoulders. When he arrives, he will call together his friends and neighbors, saying, hey, let's eat some lamb. No, I'm kidding. He says, hey, rejoice. I love ye rose. Okay. He's going to say, rejoice with me because I have found my lost sheep. And then he's like, okay, here's the moral of the story. Look at verse 7. In the same way, there is more joy in heaven over one lost sinner who repents and returns to God than over 99 others who are righteous and haven't strayed away. It's the moral of the story. So that's the first story. Then there's a second one, which is this, Luke 15:8. Suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. I can't even imagine that. I'm kidding. Okay. Meditate on it. Okay. Wow. You're acting like the 9 o'clock service. Okay. Won't she light a lamp and sweep the entire house and search carefully until she finds it? So a woman has 10 silver coins. She loses one. Won't she sweep the entire house and search carefully until she finds it? Now, on the surface, this story might seem a little bit ridiculous, like maybe this woman has OCD or something like that. Okay. She has 10 coins, she loses one, so what does she do? Well, she literally digs up the floor of her home to find one stinking coin. I mean, chances are it's going to actually cost her more to repair her house than the value of that coin to begin with. So what is God trying to say to us through this story? Well, perhaps what he's trying to convey is that every person matters to God. Every person matters to God. Every person matters to God. Not just North Americans, not just evangelical Christians, not just Republicans or Democrats or people who look like me or look like you or people who deserve to be loved. Listen, every person matters. Would you say that with me? Ready? Every person matters. And what it means is that God wants to include everyone. He wants to include everyone. And God will not rest until everyone is at the party. Everyone. Okay, so there's this third story. Somebody about to get their cell phone destroyed. Welcome, teams. Sector C, seat number 4. Luke chapter 15. A lost child. Story basically goes like this. A man has two sons. One of the sons thinks he's smarter than dad. Must have been a teenager. Okay, so anyway, he asks his dad for his share of the inheritance. He gathers everything he has. He takes off. He runs away from home, ends up partying, and he gets into tons of trouble, and eventually everything he has is lost, including himself. You got to read this story sometime. He's lost. He's desperate. He's hurting. He's hungry. And the story tells us that he finally comes to his senses after he ends up in the pig pen looking for food. Hungry for pork, I guess. But he finally comes to his senses, and here's what he figures. He figures, you know what? I might as well go home because at least at my home, the servants get to eat meals. And so we're told that he heads home. And here's what happens. Verse 20. While he was still a long distance away, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. Verse 21, his son said to him, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Now, did you notice something interesting here? It says that while he was still a long distance away. I mean, okay, here he is. You know, this young kid is trying to find his way back to trying to find his way back home, and we're told that he's still a long distance away, and his father sees him, which means that his father was looking for him. His father sees him. He's filled with compassion, and he takes off running to his boy. Unless you know the context, and in this time, I mean, look, in this culture, men did not run to their boys. The boy might run to the dad, but the dad does not run to the boy unless the dad isn't just a dad. But he's the dad, the father, the creator of the universe, who loves his creation unconditionally. And so the father takes off. He runs to his son, the same son who just a short time ago rejected him and insulted him. And he grabs his son and he embraces him as though he had never done anything wrong before. And the son is so blown away by this. He says, Dad, you know, I've sinned against you, and I'm not even worthy to be called your son. Not even worthy. And what does his dad do? Look at this. This is amazing. Verse 22, but his father said to the servants, quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet and kill the calf we've been fattening in the pen. We must celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and has now returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found. And see, that right there is the core of God's story. The father takes his lost son and he says, hey, bring me my robe. Yeah, you know the robe, the one with my initials on it. Bring me that robe. And I want you to wrap it around my boy, because today I am placing my identity on my son. And see, that right there is the priority of God. Going after those who are lost, those who are far from him, and placing upon them a new identity. That is the priority of God. So what does it have to do with the church? Well, pretty much everything. Because see, those three stories right there tell us one thing over and over and over and over again, and that is that God's priority is always, first and foremost, those who are lost, those who are far away from him. Which means that our priority as a church community must be what? Those who are lost, those who are far from God. And yet, here's the thing, that sounds good. We can sit here and we can shake our heads and we can say, yes, that sounds wonderful. But here's the thing, it doesn't just happen. It doesn't just happen. Look, here's the thing, okay? First of all, it's like I said earlier, there's this natural tendency for us to go like this, right? To turn inward, right? We become a bunch of ingrown Christians. We become focused on ourselves. See, here's the thing, being focused on yourself really doesn't take a whole lot of intentionality, does it? I mean, I don't struggle with that whatsoever. Seriously, think about that. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of a church that started out with the intent of becoming complex, ingrown, and self-focused. What church has ever started with that as their mission? I mean, when's the last time you got a marketing card in the mail from a church that, hey, join us at our church. Join us because we are complex, we are ingrown, and our vision is to become very, very self-focused. Come join us. So here's the thing. If there's anything we have to do well, man, we have to be intentional about keeping our hearts and our focus on those who are lost. That's how we're going to keep God's priority our priority. See, in doing that, though, what that means is we're going to be a little bit different than most churches. I mean, it's just a fact of the matter. It means that if we want to keep reaching people who've never been reached before, that we've got to keep doing things that have never been done before. See, that's a huge reason why some of you, when you walked into this church the first time, you were like, whoa, this isn't the church I grew up in. Wow. See, it's why we've decided that instead of trying to spread ourselves a million different directions so that we could try to reach every type of person that exists in society, okay, instead we just said, you know what, we're going to just simplify everything. Okay, in other words, look, we would rather focus on the five or six things that we know we can do well than focus on a gazillion other things that we really wouldn't be able to do that well anyway, and then on top of that, over time would probably end up just complicating what we're supposed to be doing. And so look, we understand, look, I understand, there are some people who want a church that it's like the Mall of America church. I understand that. There are some people, they want a church with tons of programs and events and midweek services and all kinds of ministries for every segment of humanity, okay? And look, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Those can be good things. But see, we think that being simple can also be a very, very good thing. And so rather than try to appear like we're going to be great at everything, we'd rather just say, you know what, there's about a half a dozen things we know we're going to do well, and anything above that's going to be more like maybe a bonus feature on a DVD. You know, I mean, really, there's about five or six things we know we can do well. We're going to pour everything we have into those five or six things. See, here's the thing. Listen, and this is where it's going to get uncomfortable for some of you, okay? Sometimes we in the church world, see, we get confused about what is and what isn't sacred. Okay, for example, I mean, we forget that the only thing that is sacred is the mission and the message of Jesus. That's the only thing that is sacred, okay? I hate to tell you this, but the programs are not sacred. Okay, look, the church service times are not sacred. The style of music is not sacred. Even the way we gather like this with chairs and rows, this is not sacred, okay? The way we dress is not sacred. The color of the carpet is not sacred. The way we communicate is not sacred. The only thing that is sacred is the mission. In other words, look, God gives us tons of flexibility in terms of how we reach people. But he does not give us a lot of flexibility when it comes to whether or not we are actually reaching people. And so see, a lot of things that Christians get bent out of shape about, I mean, you think about this, a lot of things that Christians get so bent out of shape about have nothing to do with the Bible or the mission. No, most of the time, it usually has to do more with personal preferences, right? Or the way they think church should be done. That's why I always think it's funny when people come, you know, they'll show up and visit, you know, some weekend, and some people will say, now, excuse me, you know, at our last church, okay, at our last church, we had such and such program. I loved it. At our last church, we had Kiwana, not Kiwana, Awana, Awanas. We had Awanas, and we had Royal Rangers. And at our last church, we had VBS. And at our last church, we had early sunrise Easter service. At our last church, and sometimes I just want to go, whoo, time out, hold on. Sounds like you really liked your last church. Maybe you should go back. I'm just saying. But see, that's what we mean when we say, look, we understand the Orchard is not the right church for everyone. That's okay. It can't be. Look, if we try to be the right church for everyone, we will end up reaching no one. I mean, it's like a radio station that thinks it's going to appeal to everybody, right? Okay, so like 1 minute, it's going to play Miley Cyrus, and you know, then the next moment, it's going to play like Jay-Z, and then the next minute, it's going to play Paramore, and the next minute, it's going to play, piece by Beethoven. You know what you're going to do if your favorite radio station starts pulling that kind of junk? You're going to punch your radio, and you're going to subscribe to XM Satellite. Yes. See, here's the thing. When you know what you're good at and when you know what you're not good at, okay, and when you know what it is you're trying to accomplish, it makes it so much easier just to be able to say to people, hey, when they say, excuse me, do you have a women's ministry? Yes, we do. Every Saturday at 5 o'clock and Sunday morning at 9 and 11. Do you have a men's ministry? Absolutely. Every Saturday night at 5 o'clock, every Sunday morning, 9 and 11 a.m. Do you have a young adults ministry? Oh, absolutely we do. Every Saturday night at 5 o'clock, every Sunday morning at 9 and 11. I know I'm being facetious. Look, do you want to have a men's ministry? Look, then go meet some neighbors who are men. Go down to the pub, or yes, I said pub, or go to Starbucks, go somewhere and have some conversation and see what happens. Do you want to have a women's ministry? Be the women's ministry, okay? Meet some women in the church. Go serve some single moms. Go serve and love and restore dignity to a woman who's been abused. That's women's ministry at its finest. And again, look, these types of ministries aren't bad. I mean, and we're not against those things. In fact, in the next couple of weeks, I mean, we're so simple that there's some things we should be doing that we're not, and we're trying, and we're going to talk more in the next few weeks about how we're going to be helping you to connect a little better and how to grow in your faith and all. But let me just be really clear, okay? If you don't like who we are now, you're probably not going to like who we are a year from now, or 5 years from now. Because see, we are always going to be a church that is more focused on those who are outside of these walls than those who are on the inside. And I know when I say that, there's always someone who's going, that just doesn't seem very balanced. Well, here's the thing. First of all, I don't know as if we're ever called to be 50-50 split. Jesus wasn't. And so if that's the case, Jesus was not balanced. Because Jesus was way more focused on those who were lost than those who were found. Will we help you grow? Absolutely we will. We'll help you grow. We're not going to force feed you, but we'll help you grow, okay? Because see, ultimately, spiritual growth is your responsibility. It's your responsibility. We'll set the table. We'll put some delicious food out. But you got to pick up the fork, and you got to put it in the food, and you got to put it in your mouth, and you have to chew it, and you have to swallow it. That's the only way the nutrients are going to get to your body. So we'll give you some food, we'll set the table, but you got to engage. Will we help you connect? Absolutely, we'll do our best to help you connect. Even then, though, you're still going to have to take initiative. You're still going to take steps of faith. And I know I can almost hear it. Scott, what about me? What about my needs? Well, see, here's what I think. I think that the more that your life is about others... Okay, listen. The more that you turn your focus on someone else, you know what I think? I think the more God turns his focus onto you. And I got to tell you, that's one of the things I love about the Orchard community. Because I'm telling you, the fact that this church community is filled with people who believe that and who understand that and who are willing to set aside their personal preferences for how they think church should be done, or they're willing to push aside how they think certain church services should feel or whatever it is, and they understand, look, they understand, they've experienced it firsthand in their lives. And listen, let me just say that if you're visiting here, you need to know, okay, you need to know something. You need to know that these people here are people who understand that when the church is doing what it's supposed to be doing, it has the potential to change and influence the community in some of the most beautiful ways imaginable. They get that. I'm telling you, this is a group of people who understand that the church is one of the only organizations that in the world that does not solely exist for those on the inside. Think about that. That's why I hate the word membership for church, because church is not something you should be a member of. That's what you, a health club. You're a member at a health club. See, we wonder why people want to make church all about themselves. Well, when we use terms like membership, what are you saying? We're here solely for you. But we're not here solely for you. Partially we're here for you, but man, we're here for the people who don't know God and who are lost. I like the word partnership. How about that? How about investment? People say, well, what are the benefits of being a member at the Orchard? Well, I'll tell you what the benefits are. You get to tithe. You get to serve. Yeah, you get to sacrifice, and you get to make your life more about others than yourself. Those are the benefits of membership. Want to join? Look, we're not interested in just being a church in Aurora. We want to be a part of what makes Aurora what it is. And see, here's the thing. Being simple is not just about knowing what we can or can't do well. Being simple is about realizing the only way that we can truly help people to live missionally is by giving them room in their lives to live missionally. I mean, there is no way that you're going to live missionally if you're in church 4 or 5 nights a week. There's just no way. And see, that's what we try to constantly remind ourselves, that there's a big difference between being a church and being the church. Okay? Think about that for a second. That's really important. There's a big difference in being a church versus being the church. Okay? In other words, listen, church is not something you go to. We need to stop going to church, and we need to start being the church. Okay? There's a big difference, okay? Because here's the thing. If you take away the people, you don't have a church. You know what you have? You have a building. Yeah, you have a building. Maybe a place that you could have some nice piano recitals in, or ice skating, perhaps. But if you take away the people, you don't have a church, which means that being the church isn't just about what I do on Saturday or what I do on Sunday. It's about who I am on Monday and who I am on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday. Big difference between being a church and being the church. And we're going to talk more about that next weekend. But this is just so important, and especially for a church like us whose first and foremost commitment is reaching people who've never been reached before. Yeah, but Scott, does that mean that you don't want me to be here if I've come from another church? Well, it depends why you're here. Because here's the thing. If you're here because you left your last church offended, and so now you think that you're looking for a perfect church, well, let me just assure you of two things. A, if you haven't figured it out yet, we are not perfect. Mm-mm. I know, that's shocking to some of you. Okay, B, even if we were perfect, now you're here and we're not. I love you. I'm just having fun. And so if you came looking for the perfect church, I mean, let me just tell you right now, I'm going to let you down. Okay, I am. I'm not going to. Oh, you're not going to agree with everything I say. I mean, you're not always going to like the shirts I wear. You're not always going to like me. Sometimes I'm going to say some hard things that make you uncomfortable. Probably Larry Boatwright will offend you. Someone will offend you. No, I'm kidding. You'll be offended because, you know, you're around people. It's like if you're going to walk around horses, chances are you're going to step in some horse poop, right? If you're around people, chances are you're going to be offended. You're going to be hurt. That's a part of life. That is a part of Christian community. Sometimes there's pain. Sometimes there's hurt. But there's something greater than all that, and that's a mission. And that's the calling of God. And so anyway, but I will say that some of our best leaders have come from other churches. But it's always been the people who come looking for something different and something unique and who understand the mission. See, here's the thing. Let me just make this real clear. We welcome you if you're from another church, as long as you know that the Orchard will probably never look like the church you came from. Okay, as long as you know that the Orchard will probably never look like any church you've ever been a part of, for that matter. And as long as you realize, listen, that this is not a church that's all about comfort. It's not a church that's all about just sit back and don't engage, just warm a seat for a couple of years, that's fine, no problem. No, we are not about that. This is a church community that really does believe that we're here for a far greater purpose than just attending church. Okay, and this is a church community that really does value diversity. This is a church that realizes it is not our job to try and fix or change anyone. It is not our job to fix you or to change you. We can't do that. We don't have the power or the ability to change you. Only God has that ability. It's not our job to try to fix you or to change you, but it is our job to love and accept you, to love and accept everyone, regardless of where they're at in their spiritual journey. And it's our job to help lead them into a life of following Jesus. And see, here's the awesome part about it is it's happening. It's happening. It's happening. So many of you, you've told me your stories. You've sent me emails. You've shared how God is moving in your life. It's happening. And so here's the thing. Okay, look, I can't promise you that we'll never let you down. I can't promise you that you'll always agree with every method that we use to reach people. I can't promise you that we won't push the envelope at times and maybe even push it a little bit too far. But I can promise you that we're going to work really hard at creating the kind of environment that you can invite your friends and your families to, and know that we're not going to put them on the spot. We're not going to embarrass them. We're not going to make them feel uncomfortable. We can't promise you that. And we can promise you that we can also promise you we're going to push you. And we're going to challenge you, and we're going to constantly ask you to step up and to help us to do everything we can to reach the people that God is calling us to reach. That you can be certain of. We do promise to do that. Because, listen, at the end of the day, man, what we're doing here is about the most important thing that our lives could ever be about: people. People. Speaking of people, before you go, I want you to meet someone today that God recently brought to the Orchard and whose life is... wow, is being beautifully impacted by this community. You're gonna love this. Check this out. Tim Piatek. Did I say your name right?
Yep.
Tim Piatek. What's your nationality? What is that?
I'm actually Polish. Last name is pronounced Piątek, which is Friday, the day of the week.
No kidding.
Polish. Yeah.
That's a good day.
Yeah, it's the best
Friday's
day.
Friday's a good day.
Yeah.
So Tim, okay, so this is crazy. About 6 weeks ago, I get an email saying, hey, you know, I am interested in visiting your church. How do I go about that? How did you even hear about the Orchard? Tell us about your journey up to even sending me that note on Facebook.
I had recently found out some news from my doctor that wasn't so good, and it wasn't anything life-threatening, but the point was that I needed to make some serious changes and major adjustments in my life, and they weren't going to be easy ones, and I'm the kind of person who will, you know, take all the support I can get.
Yeah.
So I literally, one of the things I did is I started just Googling churches in Aurora, and I stumbled across the Orchard, and I went to the website, and I clicked on the story of the Orchard, and that's where I started to read some things about Larry Hodge, your dad.
Wow.
And I just found that story so inspiring, and in fact reading this like instantly changed my life forever. And that was the part in your dad's story where God asked him the question, it's not going to be about the kind of faith that your people had, but the real question is, what did you do with what I gave you? And that just struck a major chord with me, because I really do feel like, you know, what is the purpose here if it's not that?
You showed up. Oh, you haven't been in church in a while, right?
Yeah, I was on a 20-year hiatus.
Wow.
Basically, after I was Catholic growing up and made my communion, and then I just, you know, I'm the youngest in my family. I told my parents I don't want to go anymore to church. So, you know, and they said, okay. I remember that day very well, the first day coming here. I was very nervous. I was anxious. That was when I was just the first weekend of making these big changes. I questioned if I would have the strength to do it mentally, you know, if I was going to have the willpower. I walked in and took a seat and saw on the screen the word yesterday, which, I mean, you could write it off as a strange coincidence, but I believe it was a little more than just that, especially for where I was, the time and place. Well, I felt like, you know, what I was personally trying to do was say goodbye to yesterday, and then so much of what the last 6 weeks were about was, you know, the promise of tomorrow, and also what we can learn from our pasts.
You made a statement that I'm going to quote you on, and I would love for you to maybe expound on this. You said, "I'm learning to live life all over again." That's a pretty deep statement.
For the last 13 or so years, I have been making really, really poor choices, especially on the weekends. And, you know, let me say, in most regards of my life, I'm a successful person. I have a good career. I own my own house. I'm generally happy with everything. I have a good relationship with my family. But there was some other things internally that I was struggling with that I think was forcing me to make some really poor decisions. And now that those factors are kind of out of my life, I am literally having to learn to live all over again. And I would say that more than anything, what I've learned in the last 6 weeks is that I was majorly lacking in the spiritual self department. One of the first things that I ever heard you say at the first service I ever came to, and it was the first service in the series of yesterday, was we need to get honest with God. And that had a big impact on me too, because I thought, for so long, I haven't been honest with myself. You know, if I'm not being honest with myself and not being honest with God, who can I even be honest with? And I remember at the end of that service, I prayed. And what I said was, you know, God, haven't talked to you in a while, but I'd like you to know that I'm really fearful. I'm scared. I'm afraid that I won't have the courage and the willpower to take on these changes. So, you know, I really hope that you can be there for me in these weeks to come when I take this on. And I know in my heart that he's been there. The decisions I'm making right now as far as, you know, what I'm doing on weekends and the choices I'm making, you know, in certain situations are very good choices compared to the ones I was making. I know and I'm confident that I'm going to continue to make those good choices, because I haven't felt this good and excited about life in a very long time. And for me, this is, you know, I mean, I really am having a hard time putting it in words. I also recognize that there's going to be obstacles. There's going to be bumps in the road. We learn our most valuable lessons sometimes from those difficult situations. You know, after coming to church after a 20-year absence, this is not how I envisioned it to be. And that's a good thing. The hour and a half that I'm here each week is a time for me to relax and reflect, and I feel like I'm in a safe place. And, you know, it's new to me, so a lot of this I'm still taking in. But when you have a room full of people who are all praying and thinking about the same common thing, it can be pretty powerful. Yeah. It's amazing. And, you know, I want you to keep in mind, too, that I'm just a normal, average guy. You know, I've never been religious. I decided, like, you know, I'm going to try this out. And it's really had a profound impact on me. I mean, I think I could be the poster child for average Joe, you know, unchurched man who was, you know, a little leery about coming here in the first place. And after 6 weeks, it's had such a profound impact. Good.
Wow. Okay. It's official. You are the poster child.
I don't know about that.
The poster man. But I think it's safe to say that there's a church community here that believes in you. And a lot of people who you don't even know who are watching this, that in their heart right now, they would like you to know that they are behind you 100%. And we are cheering you on. And we are excited to see where God takes you and all of us together on the journey forward. And so we welcome you to the Orchard community.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
It's been great. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Would you stand up with me? You know, see, we take what we do here very seriously because of what's at stake. You know, if the church fails at what it's here to do, this isn't just about, well, you know, a building is lost or money is lost or something like, no, you know what it is? If the church fails at what it's called to do, what's at stake is this thing called people. And there is only one thing that you are going to take into eternity with you. It's not your car, it's not your house, it's not your title, it's not your prestige, it's not any of that. The only thing that you can take into eternity with you is people. It's people. And my guess is that you know, Tim is just one of many, and I know there's probably some of you today, you're where Tim is at, and this whole thing is really new to you, and you're sort of finding your way back to God, and I want to encourage you, if that's where you're at, to just keep exploring, to keep coming to God with your questions and with the things that are in your mind. Be honest with God. Let God move you in your life. Because, see, here's the promise. If you knock, the door will be open. If you seek, you shall find. And see, this room right here is filled with people who have knocked and who keep knocking because they find God and they experience God, but they want more of God. And they're hungry, and God is filling them. And they are seeking, and they continue to seek, and they continue to find. But these are people who they've experienced the saving grace of our God, of our Creator. And so here's the deal. Before we go, we're going to sing. We're going to take a minute or two and worship. And here's what I want to ask you. This is kind of weird, okay? Because normally when you're worshiping, we would tell you to think about Jesus or God, right? But I want you to think about Tim. And I want you to think about other people in your life. I want you to think about the people you work with. I want you to think about your family members, your neighbors. And I want you to picture their faces. And as you sing about the amazing grace of God that has transformed your life, I want you to imagine how God might use you to introduce His grace in their lives. And so let's sing and let's lift our voices and let's worship God before we leave today.